Meeting of the Property Tax and Local Sales Tax Division to order. The next bill we have for consideration is House File 3. Members, the bill summary from House Research should be the salmon color sheet in your packet. The fiscal note is in yellow. Representative Markwart, would you like to move your bill to get it before the committee?
Thank you very much, Madam Chair and members, and I would like to move House File 3 for passage for possible inclusion into the division report. And Madam Chair, and I don't think we have a quorum quite yet, but I do have an author's amendment, but we'll wait until that point.
Representative Markwart, we do have a quorum.
We do have a quorum. All right. So at this point, I would like to offer the A1 amendment and move for passage and approval of the A1 amendment.
Representative Markwart has an author's amendment labeled A1. May I have a motion to put the bill in the form that the author wants?
And Madam Chair and members, this is a technical correction, and what it does, it resets the property tax refund or circuit breaker numbers for both the homeowners and renters. In statute, it has old numbers which are indexed every year. This just resets that and makes a technical change.
Do I have a motion?
So moved.
Representative Demmer offers author's amendment to House File 3 labeled A1. Does everyone have the amendment? Any discussion? Hearing none, those in favor of the motion signify by saying aye.
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 Those opposed? The amendment is adopted.
Thank you very much, Madam Chair. And Representative Morgan and I have House File 3 and House File 157. They are identical bills. And if the committee is willing, I would like to just talk a little bit about some introductory general comments regarding House File 3 and House File 157. And then I'm going to turn it over to Representative Morgan. There's actually six components to the bill. He will talk about three of them. He has to leave for a meeting with the school, I think. So he's going to have to leave early, so I will have him do his part first, even though it's going to be a little bit out of order on the bill. Madam Chair and members, property tax relief is one of the major goals for this session. Residents around this state are demanding that this legislature provide relief. And House File 3 and House File 157 by Representative Morgan provides that foundation to provide fair and permanent property tax relief to every corner of this state, to every resident of this state. And what we've done with this bill is create a kind of a skeleton, if you will, of components that would be essential in providing that property tax relief to residents around this state. First of all, let's just take a look at what the magnitude of the problem is. Our property taxes since 2002 have increased from $4.6 billion statewide to $6.8 billion statewide. That's about a $2.2 billion increase in the last 5 years. That's about a 48% increase. And to put that in perspective, that $2.2 billion is about $1,300 per family in the state of Minnesota. So it's had a huge impact on our families, on our farmers, on our senior citizens, and on our businesses. Now, there's several reasons why we probably could point to why property taxes have gone up. And what I'd like to do is talk about those and then generally talk about what House File 3 and House File 157 will do to help prevent that and at least help address those areas. One of the first big reasons were cuts in state aid. Going back to 2003, local government aid to cities was cut, has been cut $626 million. county program aid has been cut about $239 million. That's just county program aid. It does not include federal cuts to counties and other areas where they've seen reductions. Market value homestead credit, and that was cut about $91 million. That was primarily to about 103 cities that did not receive local government aid. And so this year's House File 3 and House File 157 has provisions to restore local government aid, to restore county program aid, and it also restores entirely the market value homestead credit, which those cuts sunset. So by doing nothing, that $17, $18 million automatically goes back to those cities, and we make no changes to extend those limits or those cuts. A second reason, and the biggest area of property tax increase in the last 5 years, is in school levies and in school property taxes. They've gone from about $986 million to about $1.8 billion in the last 5 years. Excuse me, that's about an 80% increase on school taxes. Now, what's the reason for that? One of the reasons is the fact that, quite simply, there's been more voter-approved operating referendums and more voter-approved debt service levies. That's increased taxes. Second, there's some things that the state has done as far as reducing the equalization on operating capital. So in 2005, when we moved the equalization level from roughly 22,000 down to about 10,700, that raised taxes about $60 billion overnight. And that was in 2005. And the third main reason why school taxes have gone up is rising market values per student, which are hitting up against a fixed ceiling of equalization levels. And we'll get into that a little bit later. But where many communities might have got into a debt service where they told voters that we will cover about 50% in levy and the state will cover 50%, now after 3 or 4 or 5 years of rising market values per student, that 50% levy, 50% aid might be 100% levy, 0% aid. And people are wondering, you know, why are my property taxes are going up? You promised me, it would be at this amount. And so House File 3 and House File 157 deals with levy equalization, and it will deal with five different levies. And it also has an index in those levies so that as property values go up on your property, the equalization levels also go up, and your percentage or share of the levy will stay about the same. So we think we have some safeguards in these bills that would help prevent this property tax increase that's really hitting a lot of schools around the area. A third area of rising property taxes is rising market values. And we could look at assessments. We look at a number of factors. We think we put some things in this bill that might help with that. One is to expand the market value homestead credit, which, of course, the more your property value goes up, the more your credit goes down. We're hoping by indexing market value homestead credit that as your market value goes up, your credit will not go down. And so we hope we can take care of some of that. And I don't see Representative Paymar. We haven't addressed limited market value in this bill. And one thing you will notice is that on the schedule of all of the bills that we're going to be seeing in this division, all of the areas that are in this bill will have specific days that we will debate all of that. So like I said, what I'm talking about here on 157 and House File 3 is a framework that we're going to work on. Another reason for increasing property taxes is quite simply our local units of government increasing their costs, increasing spending to cover costs for law enforcement, street service, fire departments. We think we can help with that also by increasing the aid, but also by making aid more stable and predictable, which allows local units of government to know what's going to be coming from year to year, and they don't have to think about that. Also, the property tax refund or circuit breaker program and senior deferral programs, expanding those programs would also help alleviate property tax increases due to that. So generally, the goals of House File 3 and House File 157 are going to be to reduce our reliance on property taxes, make sure whatever property tax relief plan we come up with is fair and equitable throughout the state. We want to make sure that it's permanent property tax relief. What happened with the reform of 2001 is that we went from about $5 billion down to about $4.5 billion in 2002, and by 2003, we're right up to $5 billion. We lose our reform in a matter of a year or two. By indexing, that helps make, by indexing and adding inflation to our aids and indexing our equalization levels, we feel we can make this property tax relief more permanent. We also, a huge part of property tax relief isn't just reducing property taxes. It's also to make sure that cities and counties and schools have the resources to be able to provide for a high level of service in law enforcement and other areas. So that's the kind of the general reasons behind the bill, the goals. And at this time, I would like to turn it over to Representative Morgan. There are actually six components to this bill. There are the school equalization levies that we deal with. There's the market value homestead credit. There's the circuit breaker expansion, the senior deferral tax expansion. And then there are increases in local government aid and county program aid. And Representative Morgan's going to take three of those.
Welcome, Representative Morgan.
Thank you, Madam Chair. For the record, my name is Representative Will Morgan. I want to thank Representative Marquardt for helping, for asking me to come in and help present this. I do apologize for having to get out early, that I won't be able to stand for questions at the end, but I'm sure Representative Marquardt will do a far better job than I could do of answering your specific questions on these issues. I think I'd like to tackle first the market value homestead credit. I believe it is the second section of the bill. Is that correct, Representative Marquardt?
Yeah. Page five.
I'd like to give you a little, a few details about the market value homestead credit. First of all, what you all need to know is that the $17 million in market value homestead credits that were cuts that were made in 2003 and extended in 2005 will be restored. So that is going to be an immediate benefit to cities that had to find ways to fund the market value homestead credit on their own since those state aids were cut over the last 4 years. In addition, the maximum market value will be inflated based on the annual increase in average taxable market value of homestead and ag properties. What that will do, in effect, this year, is it will raise the maximum value for the market value homestead credit for residential properties from $76,000 to $83,000. This will raise the maximum refund, or the maximum credit, from $304 to $332. It will raise the phase-out market value on homes to $452,000. And everyone with a home above $83,000 in value, this will mean about an extra $34 in market value homestead credit for them. For ag properties, it will raise the maximum from $115,000 to $132,000. This will raise the maximum market value homestead credit for ag properties from $345 to $396. And the average increase in ag property homestead credit will be about $60. So those are the increases that will be seen on market value homestead credit. In the other two categories, local government aid and county aid, we do not have appropriation amounts yet. We'll be waiting for the targets to get those appropriation amounts in there. But if you would turn to local government aid first, I'll give you what I can on that. On page 10, currently local government aid is at about $485 million. There will be an increase, and again, we don't have those targets yet, but in addition, beyond the increase that we do get, there will be an inflation factor starting in pay 2009. and the inflation factor will be the implicit price deflator, which is essentially the government version of the consumer price index. There will also be a maximum gain and loss factored in for cities. Hopefully, the goal there would be to help cities who receive local government aid to budget a little better, to have a little more consistent sense of what's going to be coming in future years, and that should help them establish budgets and minimize the roller coaster effect that many cities have been experiencing, at least recently. If you'll then turn to the county program aid section, which is on page 11. In 2003, county program aid stood at about $226 million. Currently, it's at $205 million, with about $100 million going towards need aid and $105 million going towards tax base equalization. Again, the numbers are not in there for this. We're waiting for our targets in order to put those numbers in, but there will be an increase in the county program aid as well, with equal amounts going towards the need-based aid and the tax base equalization. So counties will see relief, local governments will see relief, those cities, the 103 cities, the 103 cities that do not receive local government aid will see relief as well in the form of the market value homestead credit. So with that, I will turn it back to Representative Marquardt, if the chair so pleases, and thank you very much, and I do have to leave, and I appreciate the time you've given me today.
Thank you. Representative Marquardt.
Thank you, Madam Chair. If I could go over the three other...
Representative Dietrich.
Yes, Madam Chair. Is that appropriate to ask questions as we go along?
Yes.
Oh, he left.
You're left with me.
Darn. Actually, that's a pleasure. I have one question, Mr. Chair. In the LGA section, do you modify the definition of LGA to expand any of the cities that were left off of LGA in 2001?
Representative Marquardt?
Yeah. Madam Chair and Representative Dietrich, there are no formula changes here in this portion. And certainly when we have Local Government Aid Day, March 16th and other days, you know, all of that's going to be considered. But this right now, the only other change in local government aid other than the amounts that will be changed and the inflation is that we have changed the maximum in which you can receive in 1 year. If you remember back in 2005 when we put that new $48 million into the system, because cities were capped at an increase of 10% of their total levy, it's like trying to shoot water into a vessel or a pipe. It distorted things, and what you have is cities gaining greatly 1 year and then dropping off the next year. So we would expand the maximum, and that helps even off when you would put an increase in, help even off the ebbs and flows and so forth. So that's the only other change. But you know, one thing we haven't dealt with this that I know is going to come later is the volatility of local government aid, where we're seeing a lot, and there's going to be proposals for that, and there's going to be proposals for formula changes. But this... This is pretty basic right now on that. There are no formula changes in this plan.
Okay. Representative Dufter.
Yeah, in response to that, so it, in your bill, the cities that receive LGA will remain the cities that leave that will receive LGA. No increase in cities.
Madam Chair and Representative Dietrich, the law would remain the same. Now, need factors could change that could put some on to the formula. I mean, but, you know, there's no law change to include others right now or to exclude any. But just with regular formula changes and need changes, you could, especially with the increase, you could potentially be brought on onto the LGA rolls.
Okay, thank you.
Yeah.
Representative Lanning.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Representative Marquardt, wondering what your intent here is for House File 3. Do you see this traveling separately on its own, or do you see this file being the basis or the base of the division report?
Representative Marquardt.
Madam Chair and Representative Lanny, that's a very good question. My thought is to include this in today with possible inclusion, and it would just be brought into the works as far as the division report. And once the division report comes out, then that goes to the full tax committee, and it becomes part of the omnibus tax bill. So I don't know if you'll see House File 3 any further once it leaves the division, basically. So I think it's just going to be incorporated into the report.
Representative Lanning.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Follow-up, you know, House File 3 was introduced the first few days. And since that time, I want to commend you, Mr. Chair, for the idea of collecting all the suggestions that people want to give us about what should be done with property taxes. And it's been real interesting and helpful to see the responses. I guess what I'm interested in hearing is, since this was introduced early, and we only have one minor amendment now, I guess, what's your thinking? What are the things that you would now change in House File 3, subtract from it, add to it, as a result of all of the input we've been getting?
Representative Markwart.
I wanted to put you on the spot.
Madam Chair, Representative Lanning, I really can't answer that because I think there are going to be many, many changes and amendments. And, you know, just even the volatility of local government aid has kind of come up since this was introduced the first day. And I think there might be some things on assessments and maybe even new classifications there on certain areas. And you know, the governor's market value homestead credit plan, where you go up to $76,000 and then plateau it out to $118,000, I like that. And so, I mean, I think there's going to be a lot of debate just even how, if we do homestead credit, how that might be. There ultimately, and here's my plan on that, I think it's a good time to, with the ideas that's been coming in on the property tax comment line, is staff, we're going to go through and bring out about 20 ideas. And then we are going to give members those 20 ideas, and we will vote and come up with the what we think as a committee, the top 6 to 8 ideas, and then put that into a citizen's omnibus property tax relief bill. So those ideas could very well be included in what we do. But I think there's going to be a lot of changes, and that's why on the schedule of the division, you know, all of the kind of the 6 main components of this bill are all have specific days in which those will be discussed and so forth. I mean, there's no limited market value extension in here, which I'm sure is going to be debate next week. And so I that's a great question, and I just, all I can say is I think there's going to be plenty of changes. And all the main idea of putting out House File 3 was to put that out there to show the high priority that property tax relief has in this session. And it was kept fairly general, just with basic parameters. Will everything survive in here? It may not, actually, the parameters may. But there will be additions, and some may be enhanced. And so I see this as just being part of the mix when we put our division report together. And no more nor no less than that.
Thank you.
Representative Lanning.
Thank you.
Representative Demmer.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Representative Markwart, one question I have. The indexing, we have lots of indexing going on, which basically put a lot of things on autopilot. And my question relates to, we're talking a lot about helping local governments, helping other units of governments being predictable in their forecasting and going forward. Representative Markwart, do you know this indexing, what does that do to the ability of the state to forecast going forward as you know, the problem with fixed numbers is as things change, you know, the relief doesn't change, that sort of thing. But we can budget pretty carefully and pretty closely with that. When things are indexed and we're using factors that change on a year-by-year basis, what does that do for the ability of the state to forecast going forward the amount of money we're putting into these kinds of programs?
Madam Chair and Representative Demmer, and of course there are tails to this. Even if you look at the salmon sheet here, and by the way, I'll make this announcement, from hence on forward, all the summaries are going to be on green, and all the revenue analysis will be on salmon. Is that correct, Paul?
Yellow.
No.
Salmon is the exception.
Salmon is the exception today. Oh, okay. All right. Well, they will be color-coded. But as you've noticed here, even not counting LG or anything else on this, just taking the property tax refund and market value homestead credits, it's $64 million the first year and increases by about $40 to $45 million after that. And, of course, indexing the equalization and local government aid and county program aid is going to add much further indexing. Of course, that would have to go into any tails that, and any projections into the future, the 10, 11, and on budgets. I think, however, indexing is crucial if we want to make sure that this property tax relief is permanent. And, for example, the Market Value Homestead Credit Program. And what the governor has in his plan is $47 million. But that is just going to be one time unless you index it, of course, because as your market value goes up, you're actually going to lose credit, and your property taxes actually go up every year with this. And so if you, and just, of course, and you understand the school equalization, if you don't index that, what you have one year, you lose in a matter of 1 or 2 years. And so, yes, there would be a cost on the tails, and what the legislature would have to look at are these costs that could potentially, you know, if you were to keep a plan like this and add the other things, could be an additional $100 million a year of tails on property tax relief. But I do think that's important, and it gets into the debate we had the other day with Representative Broadsbill and Tax Committee, where you're looking at the potential of a income and sales tax base, because of the demographics of the baby boomers becoming senior citizens, of becoming a lot softer, with a lot more pressure being put onto property taxes. And one of the intents of this bill is to have a less reliance on property taxes, and quite frankly, to keep the pressure on the income and sales tax portion of it, because I think if you keep the pressure here, it forces the legislature to make the tough decisions. The easy decision for the legislature would be to shift it off to property taxes, which creates the haves and the have-nots and really hits senior citizens. And so that is the intent of this, and as you've noted, there are some significant tails.
Representative Demmer.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Well, Representative Marker, I think you characterized it very well. One of the, as I think about indexing, not indexing, and analyze this in my mind, the other thing that I come to is, are we shifting some of the accountability away from local government also and taking away some of the pressure that they might have in terms of looking what they're spending money on? You mentioned public safety and that sort of thing. There are lots of other things in city budgets that go beyond public safety, go beyond roads and that sort of thing that they're spending on. And are we, would we be going to, as I think about this and trying to think it through my mind, are we taking some of that accountability away where they know they can rely on increased money from the legislature to cover those sorts of things? And it kind of takes away that, the local pressure, if you will. While it keeps the pressure on us in terms of costs, how about the locals? Does that, you have any thoughts about that, Representative Marquardt?
Representative Marquardt.
Madam Chair, Representative Demmer, that's good thought. And, you know, there is kind of a line between the accountability and then also giving local units of government that predictability and kind of a stable source of revenues. And one thing with our local government aid system, for example, right now at a set amount, is you do have this. Now, we could maybe solve some of that through the volatility that we could look at also. But there is a kind of a fine line between these local units of government being able to say, okay, we're going to get this amount, we can plan for this, and do that, which I think in the long term will hold down property tax levies. I really think if they're, because what happens if you think you're losing it, then you, oh, we've got to do this because we might lose later on. And I just think the predictability actually would help school districts and counties and that. But it's a good question. I think there's a fine line there on what you're suggesting there.
Thank you.
Representative Earhart.
Thank you, Madam Chair. First, a warning, and that is Dr. Null is among us, so be very careful what you say. You know who Dr. Null is. The question, Madam Chair, is if we're going to index expenditures, then we also will have to index revenues to the state, which are sales and income taxes. to make this thing work, it would seem.
Representative Marquardt.
Yep, Madam Chair and Representative Earhart, that is true. It would continue to put pressure on income and sales tax portion of our budget, and it wouldn't necessarily result in any rate increases, but it would keep the pressure on for the legislature to really look at how demographics are going to weaken that base. So, I mean, that is the intent of this bill, is to keep the reliance off of property taxes and onto a statewide funding source.
Madam Chair and Representative Marquardt, you know, I've mentioned a number of times that we are up to over $1 billion in property taxes devoted to transportation needs. And the one relief that would be forthcoming for the property taxes in that area would be an increase in the gas tax, because that is where the local units of government get a large share of their amounts of money for road repair and construction. And we are not anywhere talking that. Do I have to get a bill of some sort that to make that an issue in this committee?
Representative Marquardt.
Madam Chair and Representative Earhart, I'll tell you, I had never thought of transportation funding as a property tax issue until you and I met that one day. And I do think it is an issue. And I think in other bills we can address that. I think we will probably be working on some bill in the future here that might help remedy that a bit. But I do think that is, I don't know where exactly we fit that into to this division. I mean, I think it's a concern, but I don't know for sure. And I think that might be handled better in transportation finance.
Well, we should have a joint meeting on the transportation and the property tax folks.
Representative Marquardt.
Madam Chair, we have joint, Representative Earhart, we do have a joint meeting scheduled on levy night, school levy night, March 13th,
okay.
But we'll have to think about that. So
okay.
It's always open.
Okay.
Representative Loeffler.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And to Representative Demmer's point about the indexing and accountability, I think when you look at the state-local relationship, particularly as it relates to counties, it's truly a partnership. And I think we haven't always been accountable for our side of the partnership. When you look at the Health and Human Services bill, you know, sometimes it's 500 pages, sometimes it's 700 pages. That's all direction to your counties about what they must do. And it isn't always guaranteed that they're going to get the money they need. And so, in terms of the county aid, that's really whether or not we're going to be holding up our end of the stick, because there's almost nothing they do that isn't mandated. In the cities, you have a little bit more flexibility, but, you know, there's still the basic core services there that, once again, are a partnership, whether you're talking about the public infrastructure, stormwater, those sorts of things, in addition to, you know, the poster children of police and fire and those sorts of things. I think there's some really basic things that we have said to our local governments. We expect you to help us, you know, address environmental issues, address child protection, address, you know, a wide range of things, and we haven't always been that reliable partner. So I think as we debate in indexing, we really need to think about that relationship, and if we're not going to do it in our appropriation committees, then this is a logical place to do it. And this, in sometimes, is the fairest place to do it, because we actually look at tax base and local capacity much more than any of those other committees do. In fact, they seldom look at those kind of issues.
Representative Demmer.
Well, thank you, Representative Loeffler, and I don't totally disagree with that. The only other thing that I would comment on is, as we look at partnering, we got to remember taxes are taxes. We get taxes from those same people that the property tax. When I'm paying my property taxes, when I'm paying my income taxes, they all are one big pot. And I think as we get that accountability and get that decision making, and the both regarding spending and taxation for that spending at a local level. Again, when we're using the company checkbook, it's a totally different thing when I'm looking at spending than when I've got my own personal checkbook. And I think when local units of government know they're using their own personal checkbook, I think they can make better decisions, make tighter decisions than if they think they're using a company checkbook and knowing that the state will be paying for it, because it's still our property taxes. It's still our taxes, whether it's income tax, sales tax, property tax. We still are paying those taxes. The state doesn't print money. The state doesn't come up with money. When we say the state will pay so they don't have to, it's still all of our money, including theirs. They are paying income and property and sales taxes, too. So, again, keeping in balance, I don't disagree. I think there's some places for this. We have to keep in mind when we're saying our share, our includes the property taxpayers that we're giving relief to because they're paying taxes also. So that's the only thing I like to keep in perspective. And I'm not totally disagreeing. I just think it's a perspective thing when we say the state has to pay their share. They is we.
Madam Chair, you know, there's three other areas of the bill, and I know we want to hear other areas, and kind of a major portion are these school levies, and we are going to have a school levy night on March 13th, and we could spend a lot of time with that, but if it's all right with the members, and I'll certainly take questions, but I can finish off this bill in about 5 minutes. I mean, we're going to have a levy night where all these levies are going to be talked about, and the levies in here may not be the ones. And one of the things on this bill is a major goal is to make sure that every area of the state benefits as equally as possible. And so where local government aid will help Minneapolis, St. Paul, and a lot of the rural cities, we need to even, and certain levy will help wealthier suburbs and so forth. We have to make sure we balance that out. So that's why when we put these numbers together at the end, what levies we equalize and so forth, and how much we have in local government aid and county program aid and in the levies is all going to have to be balanced. And my understanding is it will be balanced in this committee is where we're going to balance that. We will bring these levy bills together in K through 12 and division in that joint meeting March 13th, and then we come back and balance that off. But a goal is to make sure that everyone equally benefits here by everything that we do. So, but just a couple things, excuse me, on the levies, is that the idea is, regardless of which levy we do, is to initially increase the equalization amount, which will provide more state aid and require less local levy, and we will inflate that or index that every year according to the average increase in market value per student. So that would... So when you have a situation where a school went in on a bond issue and said it would be 50% and 50%, it will stay as close to 50 and 50 as possible throughout the duration of that bond, and you won't go all the way from 50% levy to 100% local effort.
Representative Marquardt, we have one more question.
Oh, I'm sorry. Yes.
Representative Anderson.
Madam Chair, Representative Marquardt, I'm glad you had the chance to give those comments because I think in our conversation that we had in my office, it was a concern for me about the balance because, as you know, and I think this is something that Representative Dietrich had alluded to, my city does not receive any local government aid. And it's frustrating for them, especially when they look at other cities. I think we talked about a little bit about the accountability and how these funds are being used. And I'd like to hear from you, what kind of safeguards are you going to put in place to make sure that when cities receive LGA and counties, that money is being used for essential services and that's the first priority?
Madam Chair and Representative Anderson, I do not support telling cities where to put those dollars. I have faith that when they receive the local government aid dollars, they're used for good use. But I do think there are safeguards in the system, and that is in local units of government, they work the closest with our constituents, and they, on a day-in, day-out basis, are in and amongst their constituents, who elect them every 4 years, or in some cases every 2 years for mayor. And so the LGA, I mean, that is a big question, and that's why the intent of this, and I hope of this division, and it's certainly my goal, is to make sure that those who do not receive local government aid will benefit equally as we look at expanding market value homestead credit, as we look at some of the various levies. For example, if we add dollars into equalization on the operating referendum, that will help some of the wealthier suburban districts, for example. And so there are some things you can do with those school levies. Actually, as I look at the total bill, I think probably 50% of whatever the dollars we receive, probably, roughly, will go into those school levies. So the largest single share of the dollars will probably go into the school levies. And I really see the school levies as kind of the the balancing point where you can really do that. And so that's my commitment, and I think it's the goal of this committee is to make sure it's as equal as possible on the property tax relief. And that's, Representative Anderson, that your concern, and we met that day, that's a major concern for me. And so, because you're right, there's many cities that do not receive the local government aid. And that's why out in the townships, for example, and in agricultural, they won't benefit from local government aid. But that's why you have to take this package in a total, in its total context, because several things will help farmers: increased market value homestead credit, the county program aid, the school equalization. These reducing the levies on the school will greatly help those areas. So you need to, you know, balance it all out.
Representative Anderson.
Madam Chair, Representative Marquardt, well, I look forward to working with you on this because, as I said, it is very important to me that we have the balance and that there is fairness to this. And I guess the other question that I wanted to put to you, too, and maybe put this in your ear, Representative Loeffler and I have been working on the property tax refund, as you assigned to us, as a good teacher would, right? And I guess I would like encourage you to maybe look at the targeted property tax refund and look at maybe expanding that. I think that would be more helpful, especially in areas like mine, perhaps Representative Dietrich's district as well, and other people's districts too, because I think that that is another way that we can provide property tax relief to us in the suburbs, and it's definitely needed. So thank you.
Representative Earhart.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Representative Anderson, you know that even though you don't get any LGA, your people will be paying for the LGA and relief in the other areas of the state. Because I think if the figures are, if I remember correctly, about 63% of the sales tax are produced in the Southern County metro area. These may have changed. I might get some fresh numbers. 67% of the income taxes produced in the state are produced in the Southern County metro area, so that's if you don't get anything back from that, or that means that you're paying for your own and everybody else, you're helping everybody else in the state. I just thought that maybe I know that, but
Madam Chair,
Representative Anderson,
Representative Earhart, that's why I brought up the issue, because it is frustrating, and that gets at the point of the accountability. When my cities hear of, I don't know if they're tall tales or what, of how the money is used in other places, it's really frustrating to them because they have real needs. So, yes, I understand that.
Representative Marquardt?
Madam Chair, I was going to ask the Chair of the Taxes Committee if she anticipates having sufficient target money to buy down everything we're beginning to look at here. You have any idea? Would you venture a guess?
Representative Lynchinsky.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Representative Earhart, I would not venture a guess. And I think we have to wait for the forecast, and then I'll do my best. I'll take my best shot at convincing the Speaker that the Tax Committee needs the biggest possible target, competing against all the other finance chairs who will be trying to get the biggest piece of the pie. But the Tax Committee, as you all know, is the only committee that, in addition to getting a target to spend, has to find the money for all the other committees to spend. So as Representative Earhart's on the full committee, so he knows that he will be deeply involved in, if there are more revenues that are needed, where will they come from, and that'll form, I guess, everybody's target, and I look forward to it. And I think it's been nice to watch the debate just here this morning and have the different parts of the state weigh in. It's very important for all members to know that everyone's got a perspective.
Representative Marquardt.
Madam Chair, and I'll finish up here in just a couple minutes if that's all right, but you know, that's an important point, and like Chairperson Lynchinsky, we're hoping for as big a target as we possibly can, but regardless of what that might be, what's important is that when we put the first dollar into the relief, that we have a system in place that it's doing all the right things. It's fair, equitable, permanent, you know, and all of those things. So that's why what we set up here, we can't just look at what the dollars ultimately may be in it, but make sure it's doing the right things when those dollars go in. Just two other areas on the bill. There is the circuit breaker, which is expanded roughly. The income levels are expanded by about 6%, and the maximum refund is additional about 6%, up to about $1,850. And the renter's maximum credit goes up to about $1,500. And then on the property tax senior citizen deferral, there's two changes. One is right now both spouses have to be 65 or over if they're married. This would require just one of them to be 65. And then the other is right now the income maximum is about $60,000 for that program. What we do is we match it up with the circuit breaker program. We just bring them together. So now it would be a $99,000 maximum to get into that program. So, and that's the bill. Like I said, this is, as many of you have mentioned, this is just a framework to look at starting the process to provide permanent property tax relief. So I'm very impressed and very encouraged, because everyone on this committee wants property tax relief and just the discussion. And we will be putting things together, and we're going to be debating each one of these points as people bring various bills on various days and so forth. But it was great to have this discussion, and thank you, Madam Chair.
Thank you, Representative Marquardt. Is there anyone in the audience who wishes to testify on House File 3? Representative Marquardt has moved that House File 3 be laid over for possible inclusion in the Property Tax Committee report. All in favor of laying over House File 3 for possible inclusion in the Property Tax report, say aye.
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 Those opposed? House File 3 has been laid over.
Thank you, members. And thank you very much, Chair Brown, for chairing that meeting. And also, when we talk about balancing this all off, we're going to be looking over to Mr. Hines when he comes out with his property tax simulations, and we look at those and make sure all the... So he's going to be the key person at that point. We've got to move the pressure on to somebody else here at this point. Okay, we are... Representative Demmer.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Just a quick comment. I probably should have said this when you're at the table, but I'd like to compliment you on the way you're laying out this framework, Mr. Chair, so that some of us new in taxes, we've got little pieces that we've known in the past, and they're kind of picking up on the whole picture. And as we deal with this thing, I just want to commend you on the way you're laying out a framework for us and then allowing us to break it down and have our little discussions about each thing. So thank you, and my compliments to that.
Thank you very much, Representative Demmer. And that's one reason I wanted to start out with this bill today and just kind of lay that out. And there's going to be many, many changes. So thank you. We are now here at House File 135, Representative Cranky, I didn't know you were behind me keeping track of me today. That's why everyone was
trying to warn you.
That's why you warned me. Welcome to the committee, Mr. Chair. So thank you very much for being here. And you didn't have any comments on that last bill. You must be waiting for later in the year. All right. So, thank you.
Mr. Chair.
I'm sorry. Yes, Representative Lincheski.
Mr. Chair, did you just notice, I just think for the record, former representative and chair of the tax committee, Representative Cranky, just nodded his head yes. I think we should take note of that.
I know that.
Maybe there's a change in the winds. I don't know. I'm sure there's not, but I just thought we should note that the head actually went up and down. It's a rare occasion. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
You bet. Thank you. We will, Representative Westrom, if you would come forward and present House File 135. And first of all, do we have someone that would move his bill? Representative Demmer moves House File 135 for a possible inclusion into the division report. Thank you for being here today, Representative Westrom.
Thank you, Chair Marquardt and committee members, for the opportunity to hear House File 135. I believe the page has passed out a statement from a constituent of mine who brought this to my attention, and working with Karen Baker throughout the summer and fall, came up with this realization, and at least I did. Karen certainly probably knew it long ago, but the constituent request was regarding a building in the, near the downtown of Hoffman. The business lost their contract that was in there, and as a result they closed down, and the building is now sitting vacant, going into a foreclosure through the bank, and the county has got delinquent taxes on it, and the Mr. Paulson, who's the statement that you've got handed out at the committee, by the committee page, will detail some of these facts, but essentially they have looked to try to sell the building, and the value that was being collected on it when there was a business in there was some over $200,000, and now according to Mr. Paulson, they have continuously worked with the assessor to bring the value down. They have had the building listed at $100,000, and they'd take most any offer. They just can't simply sell it. So to even be collecting taxes on $100,000 is probably a high assessed value figure. And so they, as they've wrestled through this, they've discovered the county, if they even chose, couldn't abate back or delinquent property taxes and interest to get this building possibly sold and to clear the slate for a future building. The building has been sitting vacant. The jobs have been gone since, I believe, it's 2002. And so the taxes continue to pile up. It's some over $40,000 right now. And the building isn't selling. There's a one interested party that would maybe buy part of the building if they divided it. But if they divide it, then the taxes all have to be paid up. And so it's kind of a little bit of a catch-22. And so this bill simply would allow the local units of government to have that abatement authority extended to delinquent taxes, as I understand it. And is Ms. Baker here?
Yes.
She could correct me or expand on this if members have questions. They can only abate the current year taxes and not the delinquent taxes and penalties and interest. And so that's what this bill would be asking for or allowing local units of government to do if they so chose, Mr. Chair. It's not a requirement. It's an option.
Thank you very much. Any questions for Representative Westrom? Representative Woffler.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and to Representative Westrom, or maybe more appropriately to her staff. I'm not as familiar with abatement, but I'm concerned about how broadly this is written, because it just is any abatement. It's not necessarily a property that's been vacant for 4 years. I mean, it could be used in all kinds of economic development tools beyond the kind of circumstances you're envisioning, but perhaps staff could explain to me who makes the abatement decision, and do they make it on behalf of other local governments that are counting on those taxes being collected?
Ms. Baker.
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, this is an economic abatement law. It is not what oftentimes we think of as, when you kind of think of an abatement procedure, you think of the county board abating taxes, and they're abating home taxes because of values, and in that case they abate, you know, the county and the city and the school and everything. In this particular type of abatement, what we're talking about is an economic abatement provision. And to get to your question directly, is if the county decides at their discretion that they want to abate, an abatement can be either a deferral or it can be a forgiveness. So it can be either or, and it's very, very flexible as far as how much it is, how they compute it, how the percentage, you know, as far as, you know, how much of the taxes. But anyway, they can only abate their own share. So the county abates their own share, the city can, or township can abate their own share, and the school district can abate their own share. The state's general tax cannot be abated, nor can any special taxing districts' taxes be abated. So even in a case like Representative Westrom's example here, the full $40,000 would not be able to be abated, because I presume that roughly, you know, maybe a third of it might be the state general tax, you know, if you're kind of thinking. And so none of that would be able to be abated. And so each one does it on their own. There's a whole procedure and statute for going through public hearings, and so there's a lot of public notice to other taxpayers that this is going on. And it was put in place in 97 as an alternative to TIF and to supplement it, as another mechanism for local governments to use as a tool for both encouraging business to locate and expand in the area.
Representative Loeffler.
Just a follow-up. That's very helpful, Ms. Baker. The other question I would have is, in an economic abatement, is there some guidelines by when you can apply it, or can it just be any kind of economic development?
Ms. Baker.
Mr. Chair, Representative Loeffler, there is a listing of very specific as far as when abatements can be used, that let me just read some of it. It says, for instance, that the political subdivision has to find that it's in the public interest because it's going to increase or preserve tax base, it's going to provide employment opportunities, provide or help acquire or construct public facilities, redevelop or renew blighted areas, provide access to services for residents of the political subdivision, finance or provide public infrastructure, or phase in a property tax increase on a parcel resulting from an increase of 50% or more in 1 year. That was put in for a very specific but so there is a very specific laundry list of what the findings have to be in order to, for the city or the county or the school district to go through the abatement procedures and process.
Thank you.
Ms. Representative Loeffler.
That's helpful, because not having, first serving on the tax committee, I'm not as familiar with some of these things, and that addresses some of my concerns about whether or not this could be one local government forgives taxes and creates a hole for another, and apparently that doesn't happen. So thank you.
Any other questions for Representative Westrom? Representative Lincheski.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And Representative Westrom, I'm trying to understand from the letter from Mr. Paulson. Mm-hmm. So as Ms. Baker already stated, and for the committee members, the state general tax still gets paid, so a portion of that $40,000 could not be abated, even if your bill were passed. But I'm trying to understand now the net, who's the beneficiary of this legislation in the end? In reading it, it appears to be the bank. Is that correct, or are you trying to help the county commissioners of Grant?
Representative Westrom.
Well, right now the bank, as they foreclosed on the property, will be on the hook for the taxes, assuming they can sell it. Ultimately, the county of Grant is going to be on the hook when they find themselves with the property in their lap and that they can't even sell it. And so, and as the debt keeps piling up, the bank has interest and the county has taxes piling up, and at some point, if people can't spread the risk or share the loss, you never have a chance of getting a new business to come in and buy it. And this building, at least locally, has been talked about, well, why don't we just fill it with corn and use it for storage? And I mean, that's a little tongue-in-cheek from the people I talk to, but it is also kind of the talk in the cafe. It is who else is going to buy it and bring jobs into the community, and just with the price of corn right now, it might be economical to store some corn and and hold it. But, yeah, the bank will be on the hook, Representative Lincheski. And but it's because of this scenario that they've even had the situation. They're going to take the loss either way, and are at the point where if they write off anything, they'll just write off their loan and let the county sit with the taxes, because it's not in their interest to pay up the taxes either, because it's in rural small town, as the chairman certainly knows, some of these buildings would be extremely valuable in St. Cloud or the Twin Cities area, but we just have trouble bringing the jobs and keeping the manufacturing in our small towns. And when the prices get too high, what you have to sell to get out of anything, it just becomes a catch-22.
Representative Lincheski.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And maybe this isn't helpful, but I just thinking about it, maybe Ms. Baker or someone can answer. If not, I mean, I think the committee members know I'm not a fan of Job Z, but if this property was developed as a Job Z project and wouldn't pay any taxes of any kind for 12 years, it would seem to me, does the statute allow that if you could attract a business, they could pay the $40,000 in taxes, and then that would be a drop in the bucket for the 12 years of no income, sales, and property tax? Could that kind of exchange take place, where if you brought a company in, they would pay the back taxes?
Ms. Baker?
Mr. Chair, Representative Lincheski, I'm not sure that I'm following your question, and I'm not sure if Mr. Michael knows what you're getting to in the job.
Mr. Chairman.
Yeah, Representative Westrom.
I think I might have a little thought on the answer, but Mr. Michael, I'll give you time to think. But Representative Lincheski, right now, as I understand, Job Z doesn't give you 12 years anymore, because the 12 years started about 3 years ago, and that's possible. But the tax bill, as the bank has ended up seeing this property come back to them, they have worked with the assessor to bring in the line a more realistic assessment value, which I won't even get into that, but Mr. Chairman, our assessment value process in rural Minnesota, from people I hear, is really, it goes one way, but it doesn't go the other way very fast. And they have now got the taxes down to, it's around $100,000 or $95,000 of value on the property, which is resulting in about $2,500 a year in taxes versus the $7,000 that they were being assessed when they had a business in there. And so the $2,500 in tax value right now over 10 years would only ring up about a $25,000 tax bill. But I hear what you're saying, and I like your ingenuity. I mean, that might be an option, but we're still talking a big tax bill that has rung up, right or wrong, and I might argue because the assessed value didn't get lowered as fast as it should have, or maybe was overvalued to begin with, because it's hard to sell any building in rural Minnesota in a small town for $200,000 and $300,000. But it's now more in line with at least what they're saying they could sell it for, but they still can't even sell it at $90,000 or $100,000, even if the bank did pay up the back taxes. And so there just isn't the market, and so that's what the assessed value is a whole other dilemma that seems to have run up this $40,000 tax bill, but it's not going up as fast, at least right now.
Mr. Michael, I see you approaching the desk.
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, I assume this parcel is not in a Job Z zone. I assume that the local cities and counties have a Job Z designation, and the way the Department of Employment and Economic Development administers JobZ. They allow that designation to be transferred among parcels within the zone. And so in theory, the suggestion by Representative Lincheski is legally possible that the local zone administrator could agree if, and this is the big if under the deed rules, if they get a business that would agree to go into this facility, that they could then transfer some of one of their existing parcel designations from JobZ to this business, to this parcel. And then, as Representative Westrom indicated, on a going forward basis, that property would be exempt from property taxation, including the state general tax as well as the other local taxes, with the exception of a couple of school taxes. And as Representative Westrom indicated, though, that would not deal with those delinquent taxes that are outstanding. So the business that's coming in conjunction with the bank that holds the loan, someone would have to somehow agree to pay those delinquent taxes, because property tax liens are sort of the most senior of all credit, in more senior than even a first mortgage. And so somehow they have to be paid, they have to be paid off. On net, the sort of 8 years or so that's likely left of a JobZ tax benefit could very well exceed the maximum abatement that could be given under this bill, because that typically would have a 15-year duration. But of course, it's going to depend upon what the business is doing, whether the sales tax and corporate or an income tax benefits are attractive. But that certainly is another option that the local units could explore as a way to deal with this situation. So it's actually an interesting sort of suggestion for them to explore.
Thank you.
Yeah, we have one more question. I would like to end this bill in about 2 minutes, so we'll take one more question. Representative Mullery.
Oh, Mr. Chair, I had two questions. The first one is quick. Ms. Baker, how long, for an incorrect assessment, can't you go back a certain number of years, or is that, I know you can go back a certain number of years and change it for certain things on property taxes.
Ms. Baker?
I don't understand all the ramifications.
Mr. Chair, Representative Mullery, you could file for a regular abatement, not under this economic, but just under the regular abatement, just for the current year, really, and they'll go back 2 years for hardship, and hardship is a pretty narrow definition that counties follow, so you're really just talking about the current. But I think in the case that Representative Westrom is talking about, the assessor may not disagree that the years that the property was valued and taxed might not have been very appropriate value at that time. It's just that now they're lowering it because now the value has diminished because it's vacant and, you know, obviously nobody's using it. And but I'm not sure that at the time, you know, because these taxes now go back a few years. And that would be a question that obviously the assessor would look back and argue about as to whether or not his value on this commercial property was in fact a good value at that time.
Representative Mullery.
Mr. Chair, the next question was, let's say the state eventually can get this, or not, well, yeah, it goes to the county and then the state, and mm-hmm. It would seem that eventually this gets back and the bank loses its interest in it,
right.
And at that point they can sell it for something. Certainly the building can be sold for something, so why would we be picking, or why would they be doing this and spreading a larger amount than what they could write it off for and then resell it.
Ms. Baker?
Mr. Chair, I think what you're getting at is eventually this property will forfeit, because after a certain length of time when property taxes aren't paid, the property will go into forfeiture, and then that whole process will start. Now, I don't know how much the bank has invested in this and what its loans are and what, you know, given what property taxes are also owed on it, that, yes, in fact, if the bank at some point doesn't pay these property taxes off, it will lose the property, including its own, you know, whatever investment it has in it, investment meaning its loan. And then it will just go through the forfeiture process, and it will be forfeited, and it will go out for sale and proceed through that fashion.
Mr. Chair, just quick.
Yep, Representative Mulgrew.
As I see it, then we're just bailing out the bank, not helping the economy necessarily or anything. We're bailing out the bank here, it looks like. We can discuss it later.
Representative Westrom.
Well, Mr. Chair, I know you want to move, and if I could just respond a little to that, just not to leave on the note that we think we're just bailing out a bank here. I understand where Representative Mulery is going, but this is a bigger issue because, one, to get banks to even invest in some businesses in small town Minnesota, rural Minnesota, is oftentimes tough to get them to go out on a limb because they know there's risk. And so as you think you're just bailing out a small town locally owned one horse operation bank here, if as they absorb losses in rural small town businesses, it just diminishes their appetite to even help out entrepreneurs or businesses. And so they are taking a significant loss whether this abatement bill passes or not. The property, and I don't know the exact amount, but I know they've got way more borrowed into this property in the business that has went defunct than they'll ever get out of the property whether the abatement is in place or not. So it's a bigger question for investment in the small town businesses, Mr. Chairman, as we continue. But I'd welcome the opportunity to visit with you, Mr. Chairman, and committee members, and if there's a way we could come up with some solution. And the banker that wrote the testimony even suggested, you know, whatever we sell it for, if we can work out an agreement with the local unit of government to pay a certain percentage of that sales back, and that they can abate everything, the difference, I mean, that might be a workable solution. They are willing to work this out, but they can't even work out an agreement on abating back taxes right now as it stands.
Well, I appreciate that offer to work with the division. Is there anyone in the audience that would like to testify for or against the bill? All former tax committee chairs are exempt, excluded for 2 years from testifying in this committee. This is one of those early rules we set here, but if any other one in the audience would care to testify on this bill, you please come forward. If not, Representative Emmer has a motion to lay over House File 135 for possible inclusion into the division report. All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Those opposed say nay. Motion prevails. Thank you very much, Representative Westrom. Representative Earhart, do you have any testifiers here today on your bill?
Just a couple of the staff.
Okay, would you mind if we move to House File 172? Representative Nornes, I know, has someone from the hinterland, and if you wouldn't mind, could we push that one up? Okay, if Representative Nornes would come forward on House File 172, and do I hear someone that would... Representative Demmer moves to approve of House File 172 for possible inclusion into the division report, and welcome to the committee, Representative Nornes.
Good morning. Thank you, Mr. Chair, and thank you, Representative Earhart, for allowing us to move ahead on the agenda. This bill is in response to a request by Scambler Township, which is located in Otter Tail County. The west half of Otter Tail County is where I represent, and that's where Scambler Township is located. It authorizes, House File 172 authorizes the Township of Scambler to impose a gravel tax. and it does that in the event Otter Tail County chooses not to. And I believe there's a handout. At least we've made copies. Do you have that resolution?
Yes. Representative Nornes, we do have that resolution from Scambler Township.
The resolution is actually from Otter Tail County.
Oh, I'm sorry. Yep.
And so with that brief introduction, I have with me the chairman of the Upscambler Township to add some testimony this morning.
Thank you, and welcome, Mr. Johnson. You'd state your name.
My name is Wayne Johnson. I'm the chairman of Scambler Township and have lived there all my life, actually, so thank you, Mr. Chairman. Again, Scambler Township is located in the northwest corner of Otter Tail County. To give you a better clue, 40 minutes southeast of Fargo, North Dakota, Fargo and Moorhead. We, as a unified body at the township, went to the county and asked them to impose a gravel extraction tax because of the large volumes of aggregate that are in our township. We thought it would benefit ourselves and the county. After a public hearing, the county decided not to impose such a tax. At that point in time, we passed a resolution requesting that the state legislature do that. We went to the county of Otter Tail. They also passed a resolution, which I believe you have a copy of in front of you, stating that they supported our request for gravel extraction. And so to give you a little background on that, currently in Scambler Township, there's 640 acres of ground that is either leased by or owned by large mining corporations. Of that particular 640 acres, there's 280 that was just opened this spring, for mining. And at that, thus far, over 863,000 tons of material have been extracted from our township and carted, hauled, transported, however you want to say it, through the township one way or the other direction towards Fargo-Moorhead. And so that is the request that we have in front of you, is that we be allowed to collect this gravel extraction tax and use it towards the improvement and betterment and reconstruction of our roads.
Any questions? Thank you, Mr. Johnson. Just for the committee's information, last year we did this for Sylvan Township in Cass County. That was Representative Howell's bill, so this would not be the first. We have done this in the past. Representative Norton.
I believe the language in this bill is the same as you passed last year.
Any questions? Representative Lanning.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I was wondering if staff could answer the question, are there other precedents that have been set, or do we only have the one in place now and this would be a second?
Mr. Chairman, Representative Lanning, we did this, or the legislature did the same thing for several different towns in St. Louis County as well. I think that was the first time. And then the Sylvan Township, like the chair just mentioned. But to my knowledge, that is the only examples. And then we have 34 counties that have imposed it on the, you know, in the county. So there are a lot of counties that have imposed it countywide. So obviously all of those townships are getting some of the production tax from their, you know, their share in those counties.
Representative Lanning.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Thank you, Ms. Baker. I'm certainly sympathetic to this request, but I'm wondering if it does beg a question here that we need a broader policy discussion about how we're going to approach these matters going forward. I hate to see every township that has gravel capacity to have to come to the legislature if their county doesn't have a tax themselves. That would be burdensome for them and for us. And so I just raised the question, Mr. Chair, about a broader policy discussion here.
And thank you, Representative Lanning. I will instruct my colleague here to put that down into the notes as we look at things, and that might be something we need to do. Otherwise, there could potentially, although there's 34 counties, be 1,800 hearings before the committee here. I don't know if we have that time. Any other questions for Representative Nornes? Appreciate you bringing that
forward, and I have to say that I am a customer of Mr. Johnson's service that he has, and he does an excellent job. So it's great to see you here today. And we have a motion to lay this over for possible inclusion into the division report. All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Those opposed say nay. Motion prevails. House File 172 will be laid over for possible inclusion. And as Representative Lanning mentioned, we may actually look at something broader here on this and doing something with township. So thank you so much for coming up today.
Thank you. And thank you for allowing me in front of the order. Thank you.
Mr. Chairman, I'd like to move House File 148 for consideration and possible inclusion in the omnibus tax bill.
Thank you very much. We have a motion from Representative Earhart, House File 148, for possible inclusion into the report. And Representative Earhart, please proceed.
Thank you. When we did the tax structure restructuring in 2001, one of the driving forces was that the seniors were living in homes that they had bought years ago, and their property values had continuously moved up and were driving them out of their homes. In fact, a number of them that used to come and testify were actually driven out of their homes, because they used to come back for a number of years and suddenly they quit coming, and that's because they were no longer in homes that they had owned for 30, 40 years. Well, we're approaching some of that again. Now, indexing apparently is with us from what I've heard today, and I would also like to suggest that last year in the tax bill, ag land has already been indexed. The $600,000 valuation that was in place at that time has now moved to, for year 07, $690,000, and will go to $790,000 in the 08 year. So many items are already indexed. And in this case, we are looking at the first tier valuation on homestead property, which is up to $500,000. And the under this bill, the first tier ceiling will increase at a formula rate conceived by Mr. Hines, and if he can probably explain that better than I can, that is in the bill. So the first tier is 1% of the valuation up to $500,000 and 1.25 over $500,000 on homestead valuation. And what this bill is suggesting is that we ought to somehow index the first tier to make some sense of keeping some some fair and equitable and permanent, I think I heard those words earlier, tax, property tax for those that, as those homes grow. Let me give you a couple of figures here. In the market value over $500,000, the increases in 206 to 207 were 38% increase, where the total market value increase on all properties was only 10%. So there's a huge discrepancy in what the larger valued homes have been increasing at the rate of. Questions?
Are there any questions for Representative Earhart? Representative Loeffler.
Mr. Chair and Representative Earhart, there aren't many of these homes in my district, but that's okay. But I am amazed at a 38% average increase in value. So that says there's some wealth certainly accumulating. And I'm not, I guess I need to know a little bit more about where these are distributed. But the idea of indexing makes sense for in some instances, but I'm thinking If we're going to, I'm assuming that it would be based on the average value of all houses, not by class or not at this particular top end level. Is that correct?
Well, Representative Earhart.
Mr. Chairman and Representative Loeffler, I would like to have Representative Mr. Hines explain his indexing method here.
Mr. Hines?
Mr. Chairman and Representative Earhart, the index is just based on the growth, the average statewide growth rate of the entire homestead class property, so it's not at all tied to the homes in that value range.
Representative Loeffler?
Mr. Chair, I had assumed that was probably true, but I wanted to confirm that. But to have your value increase by almost half again in 1 year is oh, I wish I had that happening in mine, even if I had to pay increased taxes.
Mr. Hines?
Mr. Chairman, if I could, and Representative Loeffler, just to react to that the 38% figure that Representative Earhart cited does not mean that homes in that value range were growing by 38%. Just the natural growth of homes into that range, when the homes grow on average 10%, that a tier that's fixed in place like that tends to grow much higher than the average, and that's what it's showing. So it's not indicative necessarily. I mean, there could be some added growth in homes in that range, but that's a typical pattern when there's a fixed point and you have a fairly high inflationary growth period that just more and more value pushes into that tier each year as that tier breakpoint stays fixed.
That's a key distinction. Thank you.
Representative Mulry.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I just have a comment as someone who represents an area that's actually got neighborhoods going down in value, and knowing the story of Robin Hood robbing from the rich to give to the poor, I just thought we should call it Representative Earhart, the Sheriff of Nottingham.
Representative Lencheski.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Just a question for staff, and I am personally have been a fan of 1% across the board because I believe in the tax policy that relates to a house is a house, it's classified all the same, and I think the growth in the number of classification rates in the state of Minnesota is kind of getting out of control. So I've never been a fan of having these broken down, and I understand there were once three classification rates based on home value. But Ms. Baker, maybe you can tell me, are there other states who divvy up classification rates, or Mr. Hines, on residential property like we do? I don't think there are any, are there?
Ms. Baker?
Mr. Chair, Representative Lencheski, very few states, in fact, no states have the kind of classification system we have.
Right.
And, you know, I think there are some states that do have some class distinctions, but some deal with it in different ways by having credits and exemptions and that kind of like they exempt the first $10,000 in market value or the first $50,000, and by doing that they create a type of a class or a subclass or a tier. But no, I'm not aware, and we can do a little bit more checking because I think the Minnesota taxpayers in some of the work that they've done have looked at the various classes in the various states and kind of compared both in homestead as well as commercial, and we can do a little bit more checking, but you won't find anything like Minnesota's system.
Representative Lencheski.
If I may, I want to be clear, I don't. Representative Earhart is not even trying to do what I suggested. All he's saying is keep the 1.25, but let that top value keep going as the economy keeps going, so that the issue that Mr. Hines raised is addressed, where more and more homes are falling into this point they were never intended to fall into in the 2001 reform.
Mm-hmm.
So I know Representative Earhart's not suggesting a 1% for all. I'm sure he might like that, but that's not what his bill's doing. He's still keeping the 1.25 on the high-valued homes. He's just trying to index the change. But, you know, I think as the committee thinks about this, Mr. Chair, I do think we need to think about that, and I think we also need to think about all those renters also in the home as a home situation. We've got a lot of people who are renting who are getting a bad deal too, and I think when you put 1% across the board, you can fix a lot of problems. But I do support this indexing of this issue.
And as Representative Earhart mentions, it does follow the same concept as the indexing on the market value homestead credit, where, in fact, as your market value goes up, if you don't index it, you actually pay higher taxes. So it does follow that same
concept. And, Mr. Chairman, ag land, as I mentioned, is going up $100,000 a year, I think, for this year and next year on the same principle. I don't want to belabor this at this time. I have a little bit of a problem with the revenue report, even though it's only $170,000. I would like to talk to them, but I can do that elsewhere. I also brought along the schedule for filing the circuit breaker amount, and I don't think we're going to have time to go into that, but we're going to have to get into that eventually because you will be talking about that, so we'll leave that for that moment.
Thank you very much, Representative Earhart. And the chair will lay over House File 148 for possible inclusion into the division report. Members, we need to thank you very much, Representative, and we need to approve the minutes. So I hear a motion to approve the February 9th minutes.
So moved.
Representative Lanning moves to approve of the February 9th minutes. All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Those opposed say nay. The February 9th minutes, the motion prevails. I don't know if there's anything else. I think we're good. Members, have a great weekend, and we are adjourned.